episode 2 of the Obstructed View podcast. How y'all doing? I am your intrepid point guard for the show, David Citrick. With me, as always, are my fellow hosts, Miles. Say hello, Miles.
Hello.
And Jeff. Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Feel pretty good after yesterday.
Absolutely.
Anthony Rizzo, when he leads off, we average 18 runs a game. So that's pretty nice.
Oh, I was just going to turn this into a college basketball podcast. So,
fuck Wisconsin forever. I would rather have a good governor and bad sports than the opposite.
Wait, are you secretly a Marquette fan or something here? Or,
I'm an Illinois grad.
Oh, that's right.
And I live in Minneapolis, so Gophers and Illini.
I just realized, we're all Big Ten, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wisconsin could pretty much go jump off the Washington Avenue Bridge and make, like, John Berryman. anyway. So, no more talk about basketball until Wisconsin has lost in flame-out fashion, as it is wont to do in the NCAA tournament.
So, Saturday. So, we'll talk about it next week.
Oh, no. I mean, getting blown out in the Final Four is okay with me. I'll take it.
Hey, it's better than losing to Cincinnati. Which is better, in turn, than being Illinois.
Yeah. I got a nice little 3-seed NIT team to root for. I don't even know what they're doing. Fuck everything.
Please, it's better than your football team.
Purdue can't really talk about football.
It's a bad sign when I have to root for the Gophers as a successful college football team. Like, that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Anyway. This is a Cubs podcast. Let's talk about the Cubs. First on the agenda today, the Wrigley Field construction shenanigans. I barely know about this situation, so if one of you guys can explain it, the goofiness of what's going on a little more thoroughly, I understand the mail is involved.
Yeah, so basically, like, there have been all sorts of rumors flying around and getting shot down and popping back up this week about how Wrigley won't be done by opening day, which is a week from now, and that, you know, maybe they're going to have to do some emergency plan B and, like, play at the cell or something, which is dumb. But I don't think it's going to be a big deal. The video boards are going to be up. People seem to think that a video board takes, like, 3 weeks to assemble, but no.
It's like putting up a flat screen in your living room, right? It's 60 inches, right?
Yeah.
Inches, feet, something like that.
But no, the thing I thought was, I was reading about this, was the fact that apparently one of the rooftop owners that was part of the lawsuit was indicted this week for mail fraud.
Correct. To the tune of $600,000.
That is choice. Because he, what did he get in trouble for? He was, like, mailing false receipts to the company?
Yeah, he was underreporting revenues for one of the rooftops. And it was mail fraud because he used UPS to mail it, like, 2 blocks.
Yeah, he literally could have walked. It would have taken him 3 minutes. But instead he got caught for this. Which is awesome because in the rooftop lawsuit, he says that, like, he doesn't have enough revenue because of all the things that are happening. When it turns out that he was underreporting the revenue he actually was making. So it's going to be a fun lawsuit. I am sure that the Cubs lawyers are pretty happy about what's happened this past week.
I mean, how could you not be?
Yeah.
Here's a really good way to shoot your credibility right in the ass.
Yeah. I think the guy that got indicted already doesn't have any association with that rooftop anymore.
Yeah, they kicked him out like a day later.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, one of the other funny things with that, too, was there was a Deadspin article earlier this week talking about all of this Wrigley shenanigans. And, I ended up reading the whole thing, but shut the browser after the first sentence when they refer to the renovations as completely unnecessary, which I thought was pretty hilarious. So these people still exist.
I don't really good a dead spin for my hard-hitting journalism, so it doesn't surprise me. Yeah. I mean, and there are parts, obviously, that aren't going to be ready. Like, Al Yellen was going to have to find someone else to sit for a while. The bleacher issue may not be resolved, even as far as when they said it would. Like, they aren't selling bleacher seats for the left field for at least a month, but I think that actually might run longer than they said it would.
Oh, I'm sure it will. But, I mean, even when they announced the renovations, I was like, you know, I did not have much expectation that they would be finished by opening day, just because, you know, construction projects have delays, especially in Chicago in the winter, even aside from all the other extracurricular Chicago stuff that may be going on.
Yeah, which, of course, and they're still going to outdraw the White Sox, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Like, they'll fill up the seats that they can.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not like Wrigley sells out routinely in April either, so.
Well, this year might be different, but.
Oh, no, even then.
I think if you want to go to a Cubs game, you're going to be able to go to a Cubs game.
Yeah.
Especially in you know, mid-May when all of when the team has started out 500 and all the buzz has gone away.
Yeah.
Next on the agenda, we wanted to talk about just how the 25-man roster is shaping up. Miles, you have you had some thoughts on this the other day.
Mm-hmm.
We'll let you take the lead as far as that goes.
So things are going to break out pretty much as I wrote down, I think. Although a few things have happened since then. We actually released Felix Dubron yesterday. Well, it'll be 2 days when this goes out. I thought he didn't really have that great a chance anyway. But I thought since they gave him, you know, they traded Marco Hernandez, that they might keep him, even if he didn't deserve it. But I need to stop thinking about, like, Jim Hendry. This is Theo. He wasn't working out, so they released him. So I think in the bullpen, it's pretty much decided. I have Jason Mott as a near lock, but he's been terrible, actually, this spring. And I think he might actually still be injured. So I think he actually is going to probably go on the DL to start the season.
Get diagnosed with a David Patton disease.
Yeah, definitely, just like Wada will be. So it looks like they might actually carry two lefties. I'm hearing a lot of chatter about Drake Britton making the team as that last person out of the pen. And I mean, obviously, I don't care. It's fine. There's a chance now that if Mott doesn't make the team, you've got Edwin Jackson as that long man, but that might just be... I don't want to say wishful thinking. Anti-wishful thinking.
I hear that Drake guy. He got enemies. He got enemies.
But as far as, like, actual...
I tried to break in, like, four times.
I know.
Yeah.
I kept shutting you off. If I knew that was happening, I would have just gave the mic to you. Other than that, as far as, like, actual position battles, I think the team is just trying to play chicken with the rest of the league, saying, yeah, we're actually going to carry three catchers. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to eventually decide that whatever they can get for Castillo, if it's this Brian Mattis thing or not, they'll trade him. And then they'll keep two outfielders. And people are saying that they might cut Ryan Sweeney, who's had a terrible spring, but I don't think that matters too much.
Yeah.
Like, spring training stats are worthless.
Didn't they sign? I think the deal they have him signed to is only like a 2-4 deal, I think, or something like that.
Sure.
It's not very much money.
Tomorrow, no one cares. But I still think he's got I think he's got a chance.
On a similar thought, I think this is kind of shaping up to be, I imagine we'll all be pretty much in agreement on this, but opening day lineups, any thoughts here? You know, are we looking at Rizzo batting leadoff?
They score 18 runs a game when he does, so
yeah,
can't argue with those stats.
Ben was talking about Soler at the 2, Castro, I guess, at the 3, and Rizzo at the 4. Which makes sense to me. I think Fowler's going to lead off.
Well, obviously, but, that's the easiest one to pick.
I would love to see Rizzo get 20 more plate appearances a year. Start him out. Why not?
Sure. You know, until Bryant proves that he is the destroyer of worlds.
I think the only position for the opening day lineup that is in contention at this point is third base.
Yep.
And it'll probably be Mike Holt.
Yeah, I think so too.
I don't think that's in contention, really. Just the way the front office is talking and the way they're already like, hey, what we do with Chris Bryant is a baseball decision. It's very much like, they're very much like, hey, fuck you, this is happening, deal with it. Which is, I think, my favorite attitude for the Cubs front office to have. It is nice to see that. It's nice to see, I don't know, everything about the post-Jim Hendry era is refreshing to me.
Yeah, it's been nice.
I actually have more respect for Curt Schilling than I did before, because he actually, you know, asked the fairly hard-hitting questions. That was a good four-minute interchange, or, you know, exchange between those two. But it was so awesome to hear Theo talk. And, like, he was just so intelligent about it, and you know he didn't fall into the traps, and there's no way Chris Bryant's going to break, you know, camp with the team. But when he talked, you know, he almost convinced me that it was a baseball decision.
I mean, it's, like, the best line I've heard is, like, as I understand it, I don't think it's breaking new ground to send a player with 300 AAA plate appearances who's never had a major league game back to AAA.
Yeah.
That's the talking point. Like, you just hammer that home. Like, there's nothing...
Yeah, being able to rattle off, like, you know, like a dozen top prospects he had with Boston who didn't start the season on opening day either was pretty nice touch, too. I don't know if it was that interview or a different one.
When he was saying that, I was just thinking, yeah, but the reason you did those is probably the same reason you're going to do this one, because you want an extra year of control.
Hey, man, it's precedent. You can't fight precedent.
Yeah, no, I know. There's no way anything's going to happen. Scott Boras is just being Scott Boras.
Thank you for joining us for the Theo Epstein circle jerk.
yeah. Oh, actually, there might be one other battle. I think, obviously, Miguel Montero will be the starting catcher for the majority of the year.
Oh, whether he'll start this week, yeah.
David Ross will be the opening day catcher.
Yeah, I kind of think he will be. I still wonder if this whole Baez making the roster thing has been decided, because it sounded like it was last week, and then Madden walked it back. Like, I still wouldn't be surprised to see LaStella start at second on opening night.
Yeah.
I think I would be at this point. Like, he had to get that from somewhere. He's not an idiot.
Yeah, I would be surprised if it wasn't Javier Baez at this point.
I know I said this last time, but I honestly think it's the best baseball decision for him. Like, he's got to, like, at a certain point, he has to, first of all, it's what they did with Pedroia, so there's a history of this front office making that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I just think I think it's the best baseball decision. I think you put him in a position where he, you know, I don't think he's a make or break cog for the team this year.
That's true.
I think the rest of the lineup is strong enough that they can put him in the 8-hole and let him, or the 9-hole or whatever it is, and let him fail for a while. And I think that's exactly what he needs. He needs to adjust to major league pitching. He needs to face major league pitching to adjust to major league pitching. That's the only way it's going to work.
That's fair enough. And if the Cubs weren't starting on Sunday, like the showcase game, I actually wouldn't be. I think that makes it more likely that he's going to play, since they're going to have the showcase game. They might as well have all their top prospects out there, you know, except for Chris Bryant, who's not ready, obviously.
All right. Next thing we wanted to talk about, we had there's been some discussion this spring, and we've already touched on it a bit, about the Chris Bryant issue being a potentially moral agenda. That is how Scott Boras is framing it. And some of, I believe I saw something from Whitmire to that effect. It seems to be the meathead's soapbox of the day is the fact that, also, like, I've never heard, I saw a comment the other day, but, like, what if Chris Bryant was started 10 games late and finished the season 3 homers away from the single season rookie?
Oh no! But the best quote. I mean, I've been kind of tired of this whole Chris Bryant thing, but the best quote I saw was the one from Boras last week, where he was talking about the opiate of player control.
Yeah.
Who knew that Karl Marx works in the agents' front offices here? Some of the, one of the funniest quotes of his I've ever seen.
I mean, the man is a silver-tongued genius. Let's not, you know, all respect to him, for sure. But Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Laying on just a little bit thick, I think. Saying that baseball will be injured if Chris Bryant doesn't break camp with the Cubs.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's... I don't know. I just can't... Can't deal with this.
I added this to the agenda because we just had a discussion about this in the comments of the blog the other day, and I was like, really? Mm-hmm. Is this a moral issue? You know, especially given like that day was the same day that the Bears had signed Ray McDonald, and there was all this, you know, very much more moral stuff going on. They were like, oh man, they're stealing money from Chris Bryant, and I'm like, no. Chris Bryant's gonna get paid. You know, even if he's not a 10 WAR player for the next 7 seasons, he's still gonna get paid. Well,
there was a great I caught this on MLB Trade Rumors. There was a great note from a, and I'm reluctant to quote it because fuck the frumpy Hobbit, but Sullivan had an interview with Andrew Miller where he said Miller was quoted as, "Hey, we have a chance to make a lot of money in this game, but the rules are the rules. If that works in the Cubs' favor, and the Cubs are a better team for that, they're entitled to use the rule to their favor. We negotiated that."
Yeah, exactly.
What a collective bargaining
agreement. Well, Chris Bryant didn't negotiate that.
Yeah, if you're going to complain about the moral issue, you can complain about their, you know, their rights being you know, negotiated away without any say of them, their own and their.
Yeah. If there is a moral issue, that is it.
Well, yeah, it's the fact. Well, I mean, yeah, if you want to debate the merits of the players' union being completely spineless for the past decade, sure.
But, well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, we do have the NFL players' union, if it exists, that makes every other union look powerful. Major League Baseball's is still pretty powerful.
Oh, I'm not debating that. But yeah, the power that they have is entirely because of things that happened, you know, at this point, 30 years ago, if not longer. Like,
yeah.
It's not, it has nothing to do with the union as it exists today. They seem completely content to walk forward whatever power they have and yield. I mean, the PEDs thing was, I think, just in general, a pretty weakening blow for union power. They seem to give zero fucks about amateurs at all. And they, it just seems like if anything other than free agency, the union just does not give a shit about it at this point.
Their players are doing all right, so, you know, the players, I'm sure, are happy to just hold serve in general.
I don't know, like, this has been my thought with it, is, like, I feel like the ownership strategy has been to, like, cut off the flow of money to everywhere except free agency so that there's nowhere else to spend money except in free agency, so that salaries blow up, and then the owners can go, look at how big salaries are getting, we need a salary cap. It all seems to be just, you know, chess playing to inevitably get a salary cap, but maybe I'm being conspiracy theorist about that.
Yeah, I don't think a salary cap will ever happen.
Yeah, there's no doubting that the avenues to compete, like, financially are narrowing.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's nowhere, like, they're funneling all of the money into free agency. That's the only place you can spend now. So, I don't know. I'm waiting for the day. Like, I give it 3 or 4 years before the owners are really crying poor.
After they get their $2 billion TV deals and,
Hey, it's never stopped. You see it happening with the NBA right now, too. Like, there's this big explosion, and now, you know, revenues are set to jump, and the owners are crying poor for it, and it's...
Yeah. That's going to be crazy. I know this isn't an NBA podcast, but when that salary cap jumps, like, $30 million in 2 years or whatever...
Yep.
It's going to be insane.
Well, I don't think the owners will let it happen. There's going to be something to control that. I don't know if it's a lockout or what, but there's it just seems like I just don't buy that they'll let that happen.
It'll be something to watch for on a different podcast, but not this one.
Yeah, for sure. Right. We need to get back to jerking off Theo Epstein.
Hey, it's not going to happen itself.
Sure. It's certainly not going to suck his own dick. That was a little blue. All right, we'll move on. Okay, so in regards to everything else, speaking of things this isn't really a podcast about, but we want to talk about the rest of the division at all and how other teams are going to stack up.
The only thing I have is that I was listening to Marty Brenneman yesterday because the Cubs, Cubs and Reds or whatever, and the Cubs didn't have a feed. And it just made me so happy that the Reds are going to suck this year.
Yeah.
I cannot stand that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know some of the Reds fans on Twitter. Like, there was a big post of one of the Reds blogs talking about how they really hope that he retires and why do the Reds even put up with this shit? Just because he's so critical of the team and not necessarily in... You know, it's like the whole Steve Stone, Kent Merker crap all over again.
Unhappy man.
Yeah.
But I do think we can logic this out. Like, you know, the Reds are going to be terrible. The Brewers are going to be pretty terrible, I think.
Yeah, I'm really down on their pitching staff.
Yeah.
They overperformed like crazy last year.
Well, you know, and do we really think Jonathan Lucroy is going to be a perpetual MVP candidate?
Add like a 15 wins with his glove?
You know, if sure, why not?
Yeah.
I think the Pirates are probably going to still be good, of course. I think the Cardinals will walk back, and I think the Cubs will be squarely in the middle.
That's about right.
Yeah.
So
it'll be the Pirates and the Cardinals all year, and the Cubs,
you know,
hanging in there, but still ending up in the mid-80s.
I think we'll definitely be within, like, a standard deviation of contending, but...
Sure.
I don't think this is good. Barring some, you know, random overperform, which I feel like the Brewers do every now and again, where you look at that roster and go, oh yeah, they're going to be terrible, and then all of a sudden they're, you know, have a hot May, and they just are in the middle of something before they poop out in July. But barring something like that, I think that this should be a fairly predictable division.
That's what they always say. But then the Aramis Ramirez retirement tour happens and he OPS pluses 150 for some reason and you never know. But yeah.
Like, that would actually warm my heart.
I would love it.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. I know it's not ever going to happen, but I feel like there should be... Like, I'm not saying he should get in, but there should be at some point a Hall of Very Good article about Aramis Ramirez, right? Like, he deserves that.
Yeah. He's had a hell of a career.
It's, if you look at, someone was comparing his stats to Santos, and he was, I'm bringing it up right now. He, it wasn't too unfavorable, granted defensively, but and comparing across different eras, et cetera, but, you know, Santo, career 277, 362, 464 guy, 342 homers. We're looking at Ramirez, 369 homers, a career 285, 344, 496 line, 360 WOBA to compare to Santo's 367 WOBA. I mean, it's... Now, granted, defense has been a huge factor. As that's, you know, for his career, Ramirez a minus 12 runs compared to Santos plus 69.
Nice,
making up the lion's share of their difference between their 70 and 37 career wins.
Yeah, no, I think Aramis is a clear haul, a very good guy.
Yeah,
but sure. But did he hustle enough, though? I mean, we never really learned this from Chicago media.
Career low to TWTW.
That's just a weird quirk. For the 2010 season, Ramirez was worth exactly zero wins for the Cup, which is...
What year did he separate his shoulder? Was that 2009?
I think 2009 was the shoulder.
Yeah.
It was like 80 games.
Yeah, that was... He played 124 in 2010 and 82 in 2009, so...
I think he was probably still recovering, because that was his worst year in, like, 10.
Yeah, for sure. But, anyway, you know, maybe my favorite player of the Jim Hendry era, I think.
Yeah, I'm partial to that magical Derek Lee season, but...
Oh, no. Carlos Zambrano forever.
it's neck and neck between the two of them for me. And, I mean, and Kerry Wood. Those three are kind of in my, you know, like, and probably Kerry Wood as sick. He's the only player I've ever bought a jersey for. But, still, definitely by far my favorite hitter of the Jim Hendry era.
I don't know, Zambrano might be my favorite hitter at the Jim Hendry era, too. Watching a bat was pretty fun.
It seems like the Cubs have had the best hitting pitcher for, like, the past 15 years.
It's the new market inefficiency.
Well, there was that... No, because there was that time... There was a few years where...
was it Micah Owings?
Micah Owings, sure.
He was with the Reds, too, for a while, right?
I went to a Cubs Reds game where Mike Owings hit a home run. It was pretty great.
Nice. Did I read right? Jake Arrieta hit a homer yesterday.
Oh, a 3-run bomb.
Yeah, he hit a double off the wall with his next at bat too, I think.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Until Chris Bryant's a better hitter than Jake Arrieta, he's not gonna sniff the bigs.
Speaking about the pitching staff, I got a request from Miles to play this game. So, how many innings pitched do we between Travis Wood, Wada, I'm not gonna try and pronounce his first name, and Edwin Jackson this year in a Chicago Cubs uniform, guys?
Go ahead, Miles. So
for Wood, I think it'll be 160. I think he'll start most of the year.
Yeah, that sounds right.
For Wada, I'm gonna go ahead and say 65, because I think he might be a long man for a little while, and he might start if Wood doesn't. And sure. Then for Edwin Jackson, I have 0.
Alright, I'm gonna play a little Prices Right here and say 1 for Jackson. they just toss him out there for a mop-up 7th one before they're... and then he can go out and Rich Hill the world, and then everything will be fine. Wada, we'll say 45, because I just picked a number at random, and 160 sounds good for Wood. I like that. That seems. We'll go a little under. We'll go 150.
All right, well, I'll go with 200 for Wood, because I think Wood's going to have a good year, actually. Probably about 80 for Wada, because I think there will be injuries, and he'll get some starts, and also 0 for Edwin Jackson. But yeah, I really like Travis Wood this year. I mean, he was good for those 2 years before last year. I mean,
yeah,
put up a lot of innings.
In 2012, he only had 156 innings.
Wait, so Jeff, you're saying you expect a pitcher to regress positively?
Yes. I think he'll be the fourth starter by halfway through the season instead of the fifth.
Randy Wells.
So obviously the best outcome for this is for Edwin Jackson to record 2 outs. Which might be 3 starts for him.
As long as he doesn't show up late to the stadium.
We're going to have Edwin Jackson's going to find himself a nice career as a Rugie.
he'll get one out. He'll just give up 4 hits before he gets it.
Yeah.
All right, and then finally, the last thing on the docket, and I insist we play this. bit of an imagination game here. Imagination and indulging in some good old fashioned Cubs cynicism, as we are wont to do at Obstructive View. Let's play. How will this Cubs team lose 100 games?
I feel like you have to go first.
Oh, do I? I kind of wanted to. All right. Okay, here's how I see it, okay? First of all, sometime in the next week, I think we're going to hear about some dead arm from Jake Arrieta.
Yeah.
That's how it starts.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, then all of a sudden it's May and we're hearing about towel drills. It's going to be great. So Javier Baez has 150 strikeouts.
In May?
In May, correct. 150 strikeouts over, like, 200 plate appearances before he's sent down in July. Anthony Rizzo has 6 homers in August and is hitting something like 235. He has a Louis Valbuena line without the slugging. That's what happens. Starlin Castro has 25 errors on season. Never mind. 25 errors at the halfway point of the season because fuck it. It's all rounded out when Chris Bryant breaks his arm in 4 places, sliding and trying to steal a base. He runs into let's see who would be a good
Ronnie Cedeno.
Yep, there we go. He tries to steal a base, Ronnie Cedeno jumps up, steps on his arm, breaks it in 4 places, before he spontaneously combusts like a Spinal Tap drummer. That's how I see this team losing 100 games.
We can't forget Jorge Soler only getting 200 plate appearances due to injuries.
No, no, no. There's always the one shining. The way the Cubs work, there's always the one shining. So Jorge Soler hits 45 homers and makes the All-Star team.
Lots of Jorge Soler buzz around the internets this week.
Hey, he's a beautiful man.
Yeah, he's great. Everyone seems to think that he's going to put up a Mike Trout-esque season, apparently. And he has a really low floor. His new exercise program has put him in the best shape of his life. So
yeah,
he won't have any leg injuries this year.
Well, he's going to minimize his leg injuries by hitting so many home runs that he just has to trot.
Oh, good point.
It's people talk about, it seems like the one recurring thing with Soler is that, you know, people talk about, oh, he's so much bigger than I expected him to be, and this and that. I don't want to indulge in any unfortunate stereotyping or anything like that, but are we sure Jorge Soler is the age he says he is?
I don't want to play that game.
Okay. It just... He's... Because he's supposed to be 23?
I'm not sure. Let me look that up.
Yeah. I mean...
Well, he could always point to Eloy Jimenez when it comes to guys who look suspiciously older than their listed age.
Yeah, he looks way older than most of the 23-year-olds I've ever seen. But you know, I don't want to be irresponsible and give the meatheads something to think. But it's just
maybe he's distantly related to Greg Oden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he doesn't look 60.
The only player who at 19 looks like he should be cast as like the Morgan Freeman role.
He actually gets paid in Werther's original.
Greg Oden was cast as God in his high school. I don't know. Fuck. I'm too tired to be making jokes. All right, anything else? You guys, come on, guys.
I have a way. I have 100 losses. So it wasn't that far back to the last time the Cubs lost 100 games. It was 2012.
Yep.
And the way they lost the 100 games could be pretty similar to the way we do it. So, for instance, Giovanni Soto had an OPS plus of 70 that year as our starting catcher. So... all it takes is a Miguel Montero owie for David Ross to get 130 starts. putting up an OPS plus pretty similar to that.
I think it would be a lot lower than that if David Ross was our everyday catcher.
Sure, sure. But, I mean, that's possible. Darwin Barney had an OPS plus of 76 at second base, and if Javier Baez strikes out 300 times, that seems like it could be pretty similar.
Sure.
Luis Valbuena had an OPS plus of 76 that year at third base. So let's say Chris Bryant gets injured and Mike Holt is there for the whole year. He's shown the ability to do that.
Yep.
And then our outfield was actually okay that year. We had DeJesus and Soriano. Except we had Tony Campana at center field with a line of 264, 308, 299.
He stole like 50 bases. That was okay, right?
30 bases got caught stealing three times.
That's three times as more as I expected.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we have an injury here or there, we could still have decent outfield production, but as long as that catcher, second base, and third base are as awful as they were in 2012, I mean, the first baseman then was Anthony Rizzo, the shortstop with Starlin Castro. It's not a stretch to imagine an offense that's pretty pitiful.
I'm actually more worried about the pitching. Like, offense-wise, the only one I think is super likely is second base cratering. But, pitching is what I'm more worried about. Like, Arrieta coming back to earth, Hendricks, everyone suddenly hitting his 86-mile-an-hour fastball or whatever it is. Travis Wood repeating next year.
21 starts to Chris Volstead in 2012. That was a 6.31 ERA.
Believe in Kyle Hendricks. He's the new Tom Glavine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Jason Hamill guy either. Like the Cubs signed him, I was like, great, I guess. He's a guy you just instantly forget about in his starts. Like, he's not going to repeat what he did in the first half of last year. Like, I don't think he's that good. That's why I kind of think that Travis Wood is going to get bumped up, because I wouldn't be surprised to see one of, like, Hamill or Hendricks to just have a really bad month.
I'm actually, like, this is a dumb thing, but, like, I was really surprised when Hendricks had as good a season as he did last year, only for the really dumb reason that I have his autograph, and every Cubs player whose autograph I've gotten has immediately gone in the tank. It happened to Rich Hill. It happened to Albert Almora.
Well, he still has real good makeup, though, so he's got a 3 WAR just on his makeup.
Invested in Avon. It's the dumb jokes.
I mean, it's definitely possible that the 2014 Cubs just don't have the starting pitching to be any good. Because you're right. I mean, Jason Hamill, even for the Rockies, you can't just say it was an NL thing, because he was bad for the Rockies.
I think it's safe to say that the 2014 Cubs did not have the pitching to come.
Oh. Yeah. 2015 Cubs, it remains to be seen.
How dare you misspeak?
Yeah. I'll go on the cone of shame.
Jeff?
That's all I had. Especially, I'm just worried about the pitching. If they're going to lose a lot of games, it's because of pitching regression.
You got to take a shot at, that's your, how we get to 100 losses, is just the pitching's terrible?
Yeah. John Lester gets hurt on top of that.
Got to be really terrible to get to 100 losses if the offense is halfway decent.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's a lot less. The depth doesn't seem as good. I mean, Dubron's gone. I mean, not that Dubron's that good, but, you know, Wada's hurt. He's not necessarily going to get healthy instantly. You know, if they're having to rely on pulling back to get Eric Jokic, and I don't know.
Yeah, the starting pitching depth got thin in a hurry.
But it's a good thing they've got nothing to flip for other prospects pitchers if they need it, though. I don't think they will this year.
No. I think it's possible that the Cubs are pretty good, you know, 500-ish, and then everyone's going to be begging for that trade at the deadline, and I don't think Theo's going to be like, I'm selling out for 2015.
Yeah, so if the Cubs do lose even, say, 90 games this year, like, how hot is the hot seat under Theo? I mean, as hot as the scorching hot take we saw about Kentucky beating the 72-10 Bulls. on a scale of 1 to that, how hot is the seat?
Well, like, I think this year because, like, I think internally everybody, like, it seems, and that's the thing, it seems like Theo's on the same page as Ricketts as far as, like, I don't think anybody's concerned that this is definitely the year. I think if next year, yeah, and I think it has more to do with how the minor league guys go, you know, if the team is not great this year, but, you know, we have, but Bryant performs up to expectations and Baez takes a step forward and stops, you know, fanning the world. And Solera has a good season. It looks like there's forward progress. I don't think the seat's hot at all. But if we start to see, if all of a sudden the Cubs turn into the Mariners 3-4 years ago, then I think the seat gets pretty warm.
Oh, I should go check Fangraphs and see if they were ranked as the 6th best organization.
Yeah. Fuck you, Dave Cameron.
I think they got 6th org by someone else this year. I think Schoenfeld on ESPN did. I was really hoping it was a subtle joke.
Wait, the Mariners got 6th org again?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Anybody have any other hot thoughts before we sign off here?
The next time we do a podcast, the season will have already started.
Yeah, fuck yeah. We will already be disappointed in this team.
Very, very likely.
Alright. Thank you. I think that's going to do it. Thank you once again for listening to the Obstructed View podcast.
Wait. What? If anyone is listening and has a question, they can submit a question now.
Oh, shit. We got one of them email addresses that are such a hot ticket.
Yep. So send your questions, if you have them, to ovblogpodcast@gmail.com.
Ovblogpodcast rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, OV podcast was taken by a different, actually listened to podcast. So.
What was it for? I don't remember. I was even the one who looked it up.
I think it was about movies, obsessive viewing.
No, so maybe it was TV.
Yeah.
Or media in general.
But send them questions, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Send. Also, you should send questions to support@apple.com. send your Netflix password to me so I can cancel my account. Send your mail through the U.S. postal system.
No, mail kimp.
Mail.
And that will do it. Thank you for listening to the Obstructed View podcast. I hope you listen to every word of that. We will see you next time. Guys, say goodbye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks to three Take people care. That might listen to this.
Kevin Brown is a trash fire. Send your questions to your mom because she hasn't heard from you in a while, and it's always good to talk.
Send your blistering hot takes to al@bleedcubbyblue.com.
Also,
we'll make sure they're fan shots. Make sure.
Yes.
Also, send your bologna sandwiches to al@bleedcubbyblue.com. Just take a picture and send them to him. He will love it. I'm going to stretch this on as long as I can.
That's what post editing is for.
Send your seat cushions or really anywhere to sit down to Al because he will not be with his left field bleacher seats for quite some time. He looks like a man who is not used to standing.
Yeah.
I really hope they put the speakers right behind his seat.
Let's see. Send your love to Prince because he deserves it. Send you. send your dead bodies to Fred Durst.
I think he's actually got enough.
Wait, I don't even remember which one is which now, between the Limp Bizkit guy and the HBO guy now.
That was the joke.
You're welcome.
Welcome to the joke.